Just a quick word from our sponsor before we jump into today's episode. Optimizing your internal processes can often be a huge unlock for streamlining revenue and getting you and your team, if you have one, out of a manual process. If you're looking to reduce costs and headaches in one fell swoop, consider graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere, and you cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Everything seems to be more expensive these days, so proven ways to cut costs and boost performance at the same time, like NetSuite, are kind of a no-brainer. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/SPI. netsuite.com/SPI. Once again, netsuite.com/SPI. And now a quick word from our sponsor before we start the show. Ready to earn sustainable income while creating the work you're passionate about? Get started with Memberful. Whether you teach online courses, host a podcast, run a blog, or write a newsletter, Memberful has all the tools you need to unlock revenue and deeply connect with your audience through subscription membership. Their platform allows you to easily gate content, communicate with your audience, and tier membership access directly on your own website. Plus, with Memberful, there's no need to change your workflow. They work seamlessly and integrate with the tools you already use, including MailChimp, Discord, Zapier, ConvertKit, Google Analytics, and more. Utilize their powerful built-in features and dashboards and watch your business grow. The best part? Memberful gives you full control and ownership of your audience, your brand, and your business. Get started for free at memberful.com/SPI. One more time, that's memberful.com/SPI.
I've been working in AI art for a long time, and NFTs, they're kind of almost feel like a missing piece a little bit, because there's a lot of us out there who have been, you know, sharing art on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, wherever, and NFTs have come along and made it possible to actually turn this into something that you can make money from as an artist.
Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, where it's all about working hard now so you can sit back and reap the benefits later. And know your host. He thinks the 16-inch MacBook Pro with the M1 Pro chip's the best machine ever created to date, Pat Flynn.
Hey, and real quick, our sponsor today is Uplift Desk, creators of office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. If you haven't tried a sit/stand desk before, this offer from Uplift is the perfect opportunity. Plus, you can support the show at the same time. Visit upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. A desk should fit the user, right? Which is exactly why Uplift Desk has a ton of customization options. They're stable, the materials are solid. I mean, just the choices of material alone are incredible, all the way from laminate to eco to bamboo and even solid wood. The option to stand while working is just healthier, better circulation, better movement, which helps to reduce all kinds of different health risks and repetitive strains. And over 1 million customers have chosen Uplift Desk for their innovative designs, direct to consumer pricing, same day shipping. They can even give you free accessories with every desk. Uplift is a great deal, and they're built to last and include an industry-leading 15-year warranty, free shipping, free return shipping if you need to do that as well. So go to upliftdesk.com/SPI for 5% off your order. That's upliftdesk.com/SPI to get 5% off your entire order. Now, you've probably heard of words like cryptocurrency or the blockchain, Ethereum, and of course, NFTs a lot lately. It seems to be all the talk within a certain group of people. And then everybody else on the outside, it just sounds like another language. And that is definitely me, and perhaps definitely you. However, with as much chat about it, and with people like Gary Vaynerchuk using it as utility within his business, I can't help but be more curious about what this is and see if there's any application here, which is why I'm really excited to bring on Justin and Gene today from braindrops.cloud. They're a couple NFT artists, in fact. And before we potentially have people like Gary Vaynerchuk on and others to talk about NFTs and applications and business specifically, I wanted to hear from where this is being used from right now, mostly, which is in the artist community. How might this help the artist? And what are some of the rules, or what are some of the basics? What's some of the foundational things that we as sort of, you know, regular folk, if you will, can understand about it so that we could see what the use case might be? Now, obviously, we are very early on with this, and a lot of people are talking about it like many people spoke about the internet back in the mid-1990s, or how they spoke about the cloud in the early 2000s and other things that eventually became a part of our everyday lives. And I do envision a future where NFTs and blockchain and crypto are going to be a part of just the everyday language for people, but we're definitely not there yet. And if you listen to this episode and you're confused, and if you listen to this episode and you're like, well, I don't even know what's going on still, that's okay. This is a learning experience, and this may be the first introduction to this sort of world for you. And if it is, thanks for sticking around with me, because it can be a lot in a short period of time. But again, to get ahead on this, to start understanding it, to at least begin a discussion about it is really the idea here. And then Justin and Gene, Justin is somebody who is has had a lot of experience with crypto and NFT and its use within the artist community. Gene is a AI-based community artist who's using NFTs, and it's just really amazing. And we talk a little bit about Gary Vaynerchuk. We talk about utility within businesses, and I even start brainstorming some ideas as far as utility within communities. And community, as you know, is something that's very, very bullish in my world, and I'm very excited about the future and what's possible here. So sit back, relax. I hope you enjoy this, and you know, just keep an open mind. And I will tell you again, there's a lot of language in here that you might be confused about, but this is the start of hopefully a discussion and more clarity with this down the road. Hey, Gene. Hey, Justin. Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast. Thank you both for being here today.
Yeah, absolutely, Pat. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
This is going to be a lot of fun. If you happen to be watching this on YouTube, you'll notice that Justin's face doesn't look like a human face right now. Justin, for everybody listening and watching, like, what's going on here? What am I looking at?
Yeah, so I feel like it's kind of appropriate. We're talking about the metaverse and getting into rare digital assets and these things. So mm-hmm. I figure, well, lately in general, I've just been wearing it regardless, but it seemed appropriate today. But it's Face Filter, cryptonovo.io. I think they pretty much will do like anything you want in terms of like animation. I think a lot of people are going with their NFTs. They're mm-hmm. obviously the NFT PFP space has kind of blown up in recent time. So I think a lot of people want to take their digital identity that they have on Twitter and then move it into the video realm of however that looks, whether it's inside of VR or if it's just on like video chat.
Yeah. I mean, it looks really amazing. It's tracking with your face. I mean, you're not hiding your identity though, right? Like this is just, or are you?
No. My name's out there. Okay. I've done like earlier podcasts, like without a face filter. Like,
okay.
It's been a while, probably a couple of years, but yeah, cool. I'm not like, totally. But also at the same time, I mean, you know, it's not a terrible, like, I don't mind my name being out there as much, but like, it's not a terrible idea, I don't think, to share my face all the time. I mean,
right. Well, I mean, we've heard about the metaverse and what Facebook is doing and creating this sort of secondary world. And this is how we're going to be meeting people in the future, apparently, in some way. But speaking of meeting people, Gene, why don't you tell us a little quick story about how you two met up and how you guys have been working together?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I guess the story started with, we got introduced by Pindar, so to, you know, one of the other artists who dropped on the first day of Brain Drops, and Justin was interested in, you know, creating, basically spearheading this platform idea to get AI artists, you know, a place to shine. And I've been working also on other projects related to NFTs. I've had this project in the pipes for a long time called Abraham. And also just releasing NFTs and being active in AI art. So this, of course, was the whole idea was to make a platform for AI art. And so I think the combination of those things kind of, you know, connected us, basically led Justin to me. And I was super into the idea from the beginning because I've been working in AI art for a long time. And NFTs, you know, they're kind of almost feel like a missing piece a little bit because there's a lot of us out there who have been, you know, sharing, you know, art on social media. And this mm-hmm. doesn't just apply to AI artists, but since we're, you know, it's just digital artists in general. But for our case, like I know a lot of AI artists and we've all been sharing on Twitter, Instagram, wherever. And NFTs have come along and made it possible to actually turn this into a, you know, into something that you can make money from as an artist. And so, you know, the platform for AI artists was missing, you know, there's, and you know, for actual, because there's now been, you know, a handful of AI art projects that are propping up, but they're usually, you know, led by entrepreneurs and or maybe, you know, like the artists don't necessarily have a way to plug into that unless they're also entrepreneurs. And so this kind of lets artists be artists and release, you know, NFTs to collectors and kind of focus on the art. And so it's been, I think it made a lot of sense, you know, from the beginning.
Thank you. And, you know, there's probably a lot of language that the audience listening or watching right now is just not understanding. So I definitely want to bring this back home. But that already has provided a lot of clarity into, you know, why this is important, right? There's a lot of people creating, but not necessarily people being able to validate ownership of certain things, as well as to be able to, you know, generate income from their art and their work. So this is a great thing that's happening. I know this. However, a lot of us on the outside, and I'm definitely on the outside still, feel like just there's this huge tsunami of randomness coming out of nowhere, it seems. And it just feels like there's like a new language now. And it's like, is this even real? Like, it doesn't even make sense. And of course, we hear those examples like, wait, you can own a digital piece of art. Like, what is that even? Like, I could take a picture of it and look, it's on my phone now. Like, look, I own it now. And it's like all these arguments against it, right? That just like the normal person like myself do not understand. So Justin, can you give us like layman's terms as far as like, how could a digital asset be rare? Like, how does this work? And how, what, like, how is it used? Break it down for us if you can.
Yeah, of course. So I think that the easiest way to start the explanation is just to start with crypto in general, and then you work up to rare digital assets. So,
okay. So it relates to crypto, like cryptocurrencies and stuff.
Right, exactly. So crypto, and the way that kind of behind the scenes, how it works is it's digital money that basically has a public record of who owns what. So crypto, like Bitcoin, is what's called, it's a word called fungible. It sounds kind of intimidating at first, but it's really simple to understand. So basically what it means is that you have like two or more identical items. So if I have a $5 bill, you have a $5 bill, we can swap $5 bills and we're swapping the same value, right? Mm-hmm. But when it comes, and we don't need a middleman like a bank to transfer value to each other. So that's why, that's one of the biggest things that that people find cool about cryptocurrencies, is that you don't have to have this middleman or a bank or a quote trusted third party, right?
Right. That's where the word decentralized comes from, right?
It's, yeah, just absolutely.
Like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Bitcoin kind of came along, introduced us to that concept. And then after that, there was Ethereum that kind of expanded upon Bitcoin with these things called smart contracts. And so with smart contracts, you can use the Ethereum currency to trade for another asset on the blockchain with no middleman, but didn't have to be a fungible asset like the $5 bill to $5 bill example. It could be, I have a piece of art and you decide that it's worth however much money to you, and then you trade me your Ethereum currency, and then in exchange, without having to have a middleman in between, the art that I am selling or the rare digital asset that I am selling is transferred to you. And so that's really where the idea behind NFTs, and that's what NFT stands for, is a non-fungible token. And the NFT is basically just a token to verify the ownership of these rare digital assets. And they're rare because you can trace the origin on the blockchain. It's public, and you can trace it all the way back to the creator's wallet.
So actual ownership, that's where the smart contract thing comes into play, right? So Gene, give us an example of a very basic example. I am an artist. I want to create, and then I want to turn it into an NFT, and then we can kind of go from there.
Yeah, there's a few ways of doing it. I'll maybe start with the most straightforward. Like if you're a digital artist and you're making a lot, I should say this isn't strictly speaking just for digital artists. There's ways for you know, analog artists to plug into this system. It's definitely slanted towards digital art because we're the digital assets in some level. So there's kind of I think at least for now, it's digital art is most prevalent here. But let's say you're an artist and you're creating these digital assets and you'd like to be able to sell them as artworks, and you can mint an NFT on the Ethereum blockchain, which represents that the ownership of that, of the actual asset. So the, you know, it's a JPEG or an MP4 or something, And it can be minted in a variety of ways. So like usually the most straightforward is to mint it on a platform. So there are open platforms, for example, like OpenSea, Rarible. So you just need an Ethereum wallet and some Ether to be able to do that. There's also some platforms which are either not open but kind of invite only or curated. They might come with a collector base or something like that. So probably the best, most well-known one is Super Rare, and there's lots of others. So you can mint on those, and then there's also the beauty of Ethereum is that it's all open standards and protocols. So the harder route is that you can actually do it all yourself. You don't need a platform in order to mint NFTs onto Ethereum. Now, without the help of a platform, it's a little bit more technically, you have to figure out how to do that, but it's certainly not rocket science. It's something that lots of people have done. There's a lot of NFT projects out there that are trying to, plug directly into the Ethereum. You don't need an OpenSea or a, Super Rare in order to do so. But the most accessible, are those platforms. And, the trade-off is that OpenSea, for example, OpenSea takes a small royalty, out of your sales.
Sure. Okay, so I'm a digital artist. I create a piece of artwork. It could be anything, right? It could be a 3D rendering. It could be on Microsoft Paint. I mean, it could be anything, right? And then I put it on one of these platforms. And then it just like, I know it doesn't, but like it just sells millions of dollars, right? No, probably not. I know some of them have. I mean, there's been very popular ones in pop culture that have sold for millions of dollars. And why? Like, maybe let's answer that. Like, why are these selling for so much? And like, what's the idea there, Justin?
Oh wow! So just to give a little backstory on me a little bit. So like, in 2015, I was tinkering around with virtual reality and art, kind of seeing how the technology could intersect with the art world. Mm-hmm. Art and tech have always been interests of mine, in addition to finance, really. So the things that I found the most interesting about virtual reality and art together were preservation and accessibility. So you have the ability to scan, at the time I was thinking traditional art, and scanning paintings and sculptures and stuff like that and putting them into a virtual reality world, which would make them less susceptible to being destroyed through a natural disaster or war or, mm-hmm. all kinds of things that have happened throughout history, right? Mm-hmm. And then in terms of accessibility, obviously not everyone's able to travel around and go to museums. And so if you have a headset, you can go into a museum, you can experience this artwork. It just seemed like a really cool thing to me. In traditional art, in terms of a scan of a sculpture or a scan of a painting, like really high def scans, it's a fair amount of data, but it's pretty low bandwidth when you compare it to other forms of media, like long form movies and stuff like that, right? And I was interested in VR, so it just seemed like a good like initial media fit. But I was also into cryptocurrency at the time and pretty active on crypto Twitter over the following couple of years. So that was 2015. Head forward a couple years being active on crypto Twitter, was lucky enough to find out about CryptoPunks, which is probably one of the most famous NFT projects. Because it was so early on. This was like June of 2017. And it struck me pretty quickly how important this could be. Main things that stood out to me about adding blockchain to the VR and art concept was the additional preservation and permanence value. So we kind of touched on that a little bit. Like, when you have a decentralized blockchain, it's more preserved than if you're like stored on a centralized server and that server could be destroyed and then all that stuff's gone. So in a similar way of a bomb being dropped on a museum, if you only have all the artwork stored in one server, all it would take is those servers to be corrupted or destroyed in some way, and then they're no longer preserved, right? So decentralizing everything and having that information spread out is pretty key. And so that stood out to me really quickly. And then there's the permanence value too. And the Ethereum blockchain has been around not quite as long as Bitcoin, but it's been around a long time. So I feel like it has a strong permanence value there. And I think that's one thing that's kind of resonated with collectors and them wanting to spend, if they're willing, their willingness to spend a lot of money on an NFT. And these like historical NFTs like CryptoPunks kind of caught on quickly. But then obviously a good example of another like newer NFT that's caught on would be like the Bored Ape Yacht Club, for instance. And they just did an amazing job, I think, branding just in a similar way that like brands like Supreme or just any really like cultural, they created a kind of culture around in the community. It attracted a lot of people to wanting to belong to this community. There was only 10,000 of them. And 10,000 seems like a lot, but it has ended up being like the most popular number for these profile picture projects because it's just tended to work in terms of like the supply and demand. And maybe it's just having to do with like how many people are interested in NFTs now. You know, we're still, you know, yeah, we're a few years in, but we still are pretty early into the ecosystem. And I think it was kind of, it's kind of a scramble because a lot of people are really interested in technology. They're interested in art. They maybe don't know a whole lot about art history and stuff, but they can see maybe, especially because they're so interested in technology. There's something about the idea of art and tech intersecting and merging that they want to be involved with it. So I think it created a really high demand and the supply was pretty low in terms of that. And it's just pushed the price up pretty astronomically. And then you also have just the other thing that goes along with crypto, which is some people do a really good job. They have popular YouTube channels and they are pretty active on Twitter and they're just able to create a buzz and a hype around things. And then that drives the price up as well. So it's really just a supply and demand thing more than anything else, which is one reason why I think like, so it's interesting because like initially you would kind of think that it would be low supply would be super important for an artist to, you know, keep their supply down. But and that's always been like the intuitive thinking, I think, for like at least the initial couple of years for me. But then I saw there's a platform called Artblocks, which is kind of like the basis. It's really what inspired our platform with Braindrops because I saw how interesting it was. It's generative art as well. So ours is AI generative. They have algorithms. But the idea is you have a collection. And the cool thing about generative art is that you're able to create lots of different pieces, but they all can like have a cohesiveness. And so it's kind of similar to back in the day when an artist would have a whole, like say they wanted 1,000 editions of a painting that they did or a piece that they did, and they would all be the same, you know, but they would just be numbered. Well, this is a way to have like a 1,000 piece collection, but everyone gets their own unique piece. And so because you have so many people involved, I think what happens is it's just like a network effect. It actually like you have all of these people who are interested. It's not just one person out there saying, hey, check out this artist. This artist is really cool. You have like 500 or 1,000, you know, depending on how big the collections are, you could have, you know, several thousand people out there that are talking about something and just more people are naturally going to hear about that. And so it's become like a cool way to create a large fan base for these generative artists, like in a pretty quick fashion.
That's so cool. I think when we can make comparisons to the real world and the like physical art, it starts to make a little bit more sense to me. Like when you said, okay, you know, an artist is going to, you know, print 1,000 and only 1,000 of these, and they're going to number them and they're going to sign them and whatnot. There's obviously rarity in that because there's only so many, right? And I love the idea of Braindrops and having the sort of generative stuff so that every, you know, unique number is actually a real unique piece. That's like, you know, an add-on there. That's kind of cool. But, you know, it almost makes me think of, you had mentioned Supreme, and when we consider like, well, why are people paying $500 for a brick that has the word Supreme on it? Well, it's the brand, and it's the feeling that people have a little bit of ownership in something that maybe others do not get to have. Right. This is why, you know, rare Pokemon cards are, you know, very expensive because there's only so many and there's some clout that comes with the ownership of those things. Right. Is that a huge piece of the why people are even interested in this to begin with? It's just a digital version of having something that maybe others don't.
Yeah. I mean, I think so much of our lives are being, more and more of our lives are being spent online, that it only makes sense. And it's a very easy way. Like, you use the word cloud. I mean, it's a super easy way to, for people to not only say, hey, this is kind of part of, like, you know, my belief system, but also, like, these are the things that I own. And yeah, like, it's a quick, it is a cloud, like, it's fast cloud. I mean, a lot of people got a lot of followers on Twitter basically because of the profile picture that they used, or like the NFTs that they bought. So it was like an immediate social cloud. That's a perfect way to describe it.
I think there's also this kind of network effect that goes into it. So, you know, all of the, just to use CryptoPunks as an example, all of the people who buy CryptoPunks, you know, they have a common interest now in CryptoPunks. Like, obviously, they're all incented to coordinate in such a way that if they have clout together, their network has clout. And that might translate into appreciation for CryptoPunks. And so, you know, there's also this kind of, like, implicit incentive for coordinating together to maybe create value around that brand or around that collection. I think, you know, CryptoPunks and, you know, Bored Apes and they all seem to do that really, really well. And they have a lot of activity. You know, it's not just the artworks, but those networks of people, they're in constant dialogue and they're constantly, you know, I think Bored Apes in particular, they're famous for, you know, having lots of activities in the real world. And I think that all comes from this network effect.
Right.
I love that thought, you know, and I wanted to talk about that actually next with relation to, you know, we've seen and in our world, in the entrepreneurial world, we'd heard of Gary Vaynerchuk and what he's done with VFriends, right? And how, you know, he's drawing these little drawings like, you know, empathetic elephant and all these other, you know, characters and whatnot. And that's like the art piece, but it isn't even about the art. And many people will argue, well, like, the art's not even that good. It's just Gary's drawings, but that's not the point here. The point is having that particular NFT or buying the one of, you know, 100 of that kind gives you special access to something that others do not get access to. And that's where it's really interesting for us listening, where it's like, you are building a brand online. You have followers, you have fans, you have subscribers. And this becomes another way to potentially bring even more fandom into your world. There's even, like, imagine if there was a smart passive income token of sorts, where if you had access to that and there were only 500 ones and we could verify whether that was real or not, right? Maybe it does take the visual form of a piece of artwork. Maybe it's like a pixelized version of my face or something. That, again, is not really what matters. What matters is that gives you now the ability to go to my event and that's your ticket in. Or it gives you the ability to, you know, come to a webinar that only you, if you are a verified user, can get access to. And Gary has now demonstrated this in a way. And it's really interesting because he sold these for a certain amount, right? And there were only so many. And there are no more being made. So the fact that more people want them now, the price has gone up. And I think it's been like, it's like the minimum price of one of those tokens now at the lowest price is like $38,000 now. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, smart contracts also give you a way as the creator of that NFT, such that if ownership changes hands and money is exchanged or Ethereum is exchanged, you can build in the ability for you to get some of that as the artist, right? Is that, like, that's where it's really powerful to me, Gene, right? Like, are there any, like, you had mentioned the community with the apes and the punks, and, like, is that kind of what you guys are doing too over at Braindrops, creating that kind of feel for it?
I think so. Yeah. You know, we certainly inherit a lot of those same incentives and properties, you know, so, for example, you know, we've had, I think six now, I believe, drops. And so each drop has a collector base, and those collectors are, you know, we have Discord channels for them, and they're, you know, in dialogue. And so there is kind of a network effect that forms around each collection, as well as the platform in general. All of the artists are now connected as well. And, you know, we all kind of benefit from Braindrops doing well. So there is kind of, I think that inspires some, you know, interaction. And we're still pretty young, you know, we've just been around for 2 months. And so I'm pretty excited. I think, you know, we have lots of big ideas, like where this can all go, you know. And I look at something like Artblocks, which, you know, after 1 year, you know, they had they had a whole festival, you know, for example. And, you know, that's really awesome. I think their community really enjoyed it. And so I'm hoping that, you know, we get to that point as well.
Community is the future of business, in my opinion. And I think that with that combined with things like this and technology, Justin, like, tell me more a little bit about what you're going to see what we're going to see in the future. Like, if you could, based on your experience in the sort of meta and what's going on, like, what do we have to look forward to and what could we act on now to get ahead on things, especially as business owners potentially?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just to touch a little bit like on the metaverse, it's like, I think people tend to I feel like it's an intense word, like meta in general is just like, yeah, kind of like intense, you know, but I really feel like the basic gist, I mean, the word's been around for like 30 years. And the basic gist of it is really just like having a digital life becoming, if not as important, but like more and more important in terms of relation to our physical lives, right? And I don't think there's many people who would disagree that we have definitely headed in that direction. I mean, it's something that doesn't happen overnight, but mm-hmm. like over the pandemic and with the affordability of smartphones, just the adoption of all this technology has really, it's exponential, right? Like, technology is not a linear thing. It happens in like an exponential curve, and we're seeing so much happen really, really fast. I mean, I think I heard somebody have the analogy the other day, and it's like, if the history of like human civilization were a novel, like an 800 page novel, just like the last invention of like the light bulb down to like where we are right now would be like the last two lines maybe in the book, maybe.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I mean, and it's hard to argue, and most of the time you would flip to page like 178 and it would be very similar to page like 750. I mean, generally not a lot had changed, you know. But so I think there's a lot of people who say, oh well, people always think they're living through crazy times where there's exponential progress, but I do think that it's different now. I really do think that we're and we'll talk, you know, a little more maybe about AI and how that works into things. And Gina's like the AI expert, but like for me, in terms of the metaverse and where we're heading, I mean, it's like, I mean, if you talk about like areas of our digital lives, like just breaking it down into four categories, like working, playing, socializing, and shopping. I mean, mm-hmm. most people probably do some of those things digitally already. You know, working, you do like Zoom meetings or remote work, Google Meet. Remote work is becoming super common now. I think almost all companies are pretty much giving it as an option because they kind of have to keep mm-hmm. competitive and get good employees. And then playing, you have Roblox and Fortnite. I mean, kids are growing up now. And really, I think a lot of play is done online. Socializing, yeah. Obviously, Facebook's been around. It's crazy to think, but I mean, it's been around for over 15 years. Yeah, maybe getting close to 20. And obviously Instagram, Snapchat and all that, and then shopping with Amazon. And I think what'll happen is things become like, I think things are definitely going to head into a more immersive experience. And that's one of the reasons why Facebook changed its name to Meta. I think you'll see, like, I don't know if Facebook has tons of incentive to innovate. I definitely think that they have a lot of incentive to keep eyeballs on their platform. So I think what they'll end up doing is when competitors come along and they're doing some cool stuff on the immersive front, you'll see Facebook gobble them up. But I don't know how innovative they'll be in terms of like software. Obviously they're doing a great job in terms of like making affordable headsets, like the Oculus. They make those and they're like, yeah, I don't know, like $200 or $300 now for pretty good.
They're really cheap.
Yeah. And they're pretty good. Very good. But then it's not just Facebook. I mean, Google's been working on metaverse stuff for a while now too. They had Google Cardboard, you know, a few years ago, and Twitter just has a lot very recently. You know, even Gene and I were just talking about it before we hopped on, like, they have the Facebook profiles. I'm not Facebook, the Twitter, where your profile picture is like, different shape. You can use an NFT now if you subscribe to Twitter Blue. Mm-hmm. And then Microsoft just bought a digital shoe company. They make digital shoes that sell for like up to like $10,000 or more. Did I say Microsoft I'm at Nike. But yeah, Microsoft's been around doing HoloLens for a while, and Microsoft just bought Activision, which is like a game game company. And Walmart is getting into selling rare digital goods too. So when you see these like big companies getting involved and like seeing that things are going to head towards more immersive experience, I think, you know, it raises a lot of eyebrows and it makes you think, you know, yeah, things are definitely heading this way. So maybe, I mean, I think it's an I understand, I do, because like I remember years and years ago when I first heard about Bitcoin, I thought it was like the dumbest thing. I mean, I did not understand it. Like, I thought, well, how could, when I heard about it, Bitcoin was like $3. And I was like, how could this be worth more than a dollar? I didn't understand there was a supply cap or whatever, but I was just like, this doesn't make any sense to me. It wasn't for like a few years later till I came back and like actually gave it a chance and like, you know, let somebody explain it to me in more detail. So it's a human kind of inclination, I think, to write things off that you don't necessarily understand right away. But also at the same time, you know, it's like when enough people are talking about something after a while, I mean, just, I would say just keep an open mind, I think. And don't feel like you've already been left behind. There's still so much left to be built and so much left to take part of. I mean, we're still in like just such early times. Obviously, prices have ballooned and we're really like in a crazy bubble right now with prices, but like with BrainDrops, I mean, we try to keep our prices low. Like you say, I think there's an opportunity building in those secondary royalties. Like, like with our pieces, we price them at like 0.1 ETH, which is around $300 right now. Which obviously, you know, could be seen as not affordable to some or super affordable to others. It's relative, but in relative terms in the crypto market, it's affordable. And so, and we kind of see the opportunity of the blockchain and having like the secondary royalties for the artists and for the platform, like we're cool with that. Right. And kind of letting the collectors and the artists, all of us grow together, because we see AI art as being a movement and are in this for the long term. You know, I've seen artists that have been around for years. They sold pieces for like $20 and like X copy, for instance, you know, and now his pieces are selling for like, he's got pieces selling for like $6 million and the royalties that he's making from them, just like that one piece is more than he made in the first couple of years selling all the pieces that he ever sold. Right. So it's really cool to see the artists be able to benefit as they become more popular, be able to benefit from some of those secondary royalties. It's something that it could maybe like, they could try to replicate it in the traditional world, but you don't have to worry about the verifiability and everything when it comes to the technology and blockchain. It just makes it like super easy. And it's also verifiable. You can see, okay, that money went to the artist. Okay, good. You know?
Yeah. There's just so much more to unpack, I'm sure. And, you know, I know this is over a lot of people's head, but I think it's worth having the start to just discuss this and understand the, really the utility of something like this. Again, I think a lot of people see it on the outside and they're just like, people are throwing their money away, or this is just for like, you know, the crazy people who are technical on the internet right now. But I thought similar to you with Bitcoin, when I first heard about the internet, I was like, that's weird and I don't understand it. And it just doesn't even seem like anything like that's possible, or there's no utility to it. And obviously it's become something we all use every single day. Yeah. And now crypto is becoming something that is becoming a part of everyday language, and people are starting to understand that. So, you know, a big lesson here is like, you know, be open to these things that are happening and understand what the utility might be, because we are definitely headed in that direction. I think there's some scariness too with some people. You know, a lot of people go, you know, if we're all in the meta, does that mean we're just all sitting in chairs at home and not getting any exercise, and people are forgetting to eat? And, you know, it's like movies that we often see, and, you know, Hollywood likes to, you know, Black Mirror a lot of this stuff sometimes. But, you know, there are some good things. And I think for right now, we're seeing some really good things happening to artists who had once deserved a lot of credit and once deserved a lot of fame for their work. And now, because of the verification of the ownership of a lot of these things, it's that's really cool. How do you like, if somebody's like telling you, yeah, I own one of those things, like how can you actually verify that they're being truthful about that? Like, I'd love to know how that works.
Like if they say they own a particular NFT?
Yeah, because I could say I own anything, and like, I mean, you just have to believe me. But is there a way to like check on that, or how does that work?
I guess there's different levels of security. You know, if someone the actual ownership is publicly available. It's you can read the blockchain. There's different services like Etherscan, for example, that lets you verify that a particular address owns a particular, you know, NFT, let's say. Now, now, of course, like that leaves open, you know, maybe that leaves open the possibility that someone lies about them having that address. So if you really need to know, then there needs to be some kind of a way that someone can prove, you know, and there's a bunch of different ways of doing that. A lot of it right now, I would say, is kind of just reputation based. You know, it's kind of like with Twitter, how do you know that even without verification, like how do you know that at Gene Kogan on Twitter is me? You know, sure. there's sure. kind of this, well, there's a network effect. Enough people seem to believe it that, that you can more or less trust it. And if, you know, if you have different levels of trust settings, you can escalate that process of verification to all the way up to, you know, providing a cryptographic signature that proves that you own a particular address, which is like the most extreme version of that. But usually it doesn't need to get to that.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you could actually sign a transaction and put the link in your Twitter bio, which is some people do if they want to. Mm. I mean, yeah, it just depends on your level of nerdiness. Really?
But yeah, I mean, everybody listening, if you want to, you know, explore this a little bit more, you know, you could obviously check out, is it braindrops.com?
.cloud.
.cloud. Got it. Braindrops.cloud. And then also, like, for anybody who's like, okay, this sounds interesting, I'm still a little confused, but I want to learn more, you know, what would be your recommendation for just, you know, learning more about this and getting to understand it a bit more?
It's like drinking through a fire hose, honestly. So one cool thing is, like, about Discord. It's kind of interesting. So in Discord, you can have different roles assigned to people. So if people aren't super familiar with Discord, it's basically like Twitter, but it's like a little more intimate of a setting. So you have
private,
So you have these private rooms, and then inside those rooms, you have different channels, and then your name actually can show up as a different color. And so inside of that Discord, you can actually sign a transaction. You don't even have to sign a transaction. Actually, you can just like hook up your wallet. It shows that you own that wallet, and then it sees what you own inside of it. And then you can actually change the color of your name. So that's a very, really easy way. That's one of the reasons I think Discord's kind of caught on. There's multiple reasons, but that was one kind of a fun thing to do inside of Discord that Twitter kind of was late in the game about, you know, in terms of like, yeah, I own a piece of whatever this collection is in this Discord, and I can prove it because you can see like my name is a different color than just a regular user.
So I could, for example, have like a Flynn coin. I'll just call it like a Flynn coin or a token of some kind. And maybe there's a piece of art related to it or not, but you know, the audience listening could purchase it, for example, and I set the price and I set how many are available, let's say like 100, right, at $100 or what have you. And then that will give you access to a special, you know, Discord, not just server, like maybe everybody in the community is there, but maybe there's a special sort of VIP area that only people who are verified who have purchased that particular token, like Discord would know and only let those people in to that particular area.
Yeah, you can have a channel that's just for particular roles, and those roles can be assigned depending upon what they own in their wallet.
And then the cool thing is like about the marketplace is like, okay, maybe a person doesn't want to be a member anymore. Well, they have this token, they could sell it to somebody on the outside for maybe $200, and then they get, you know, a little bit of money back and somebody else gets access. And this is where the supply and demand and sort of economics of this can kind of take off, and why VFriends has just exploded. And so you see the overall market capitalization of something like VFriends. And I mean, it's in like the nine figures now as a result of just people wanting to get into these events and wanting access to Gary. And that's where for entrepreneurs and community builders, it can become very interesting. I would imagine that there's going to be a lot of other things like Discord that will check for verification of ownership of things in the future, and not just for things you own, but maybe you are the owner and you want to have people, you know, have access to or not. That's really cool and very new. And I think, yes, over a lot of people's heads are going to listen to this and go, I have no idea what I just heard. But I think there's going to be a few who are like, okay, there's actually maybe some opportunities here. I'm going to explore this a little bit more. Any final words of advice from either of you for, you know, this world and maybe something to look out for or something to be aware of in case somebody's excited about diving in?
Yeah, well, just to piggyback on what you were saying too, I'd say like Snoop Dogg tweeted out the other day that like ticketing in the future is going to be NFTs. Like one interesting thing, like I think anybody, like you can see these certain examples where you kind of have to rely on people. Like you have to trust that they're going to do, like a bank is going to do something, or and owning things, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with decentralization. And I think that's definitely a scary thing. And so it's not necessarily for everybody at this point, honestly, because there's a lot of responsibility that, and you can lose a lot of money accidentally if you make a mistake and you send Ethereum to the wrong address. I mean, there's no, you can't reverse that, right? So there's serious consequences. And so that's not something to take lightly. So just wanted to say that. But like, yeah, I know that your audience is really interested in like business and things like that. So I think just to touch on a few things, like in taking part of the commerce side, like learning to create virtual assets and environments, wouldn't surprise me at all if you've talked about like Unity 3D or Unreal Engine. Those are like super affordable software programs. Some of them, you don't even have to pay anything until you make above like $100,000 in a calendar year. Then you, I think the software is free for Unity. I'm pretty sure that's still the same way. Unreal Engine 5 also is coming out with like some, if it hasn't come out already, it's coming out with some really crazy updates with like, they makes it just way easier to use. You can create these huge environments and it's not as difficult as it used to be, where you had to create multiple versions of things. Like this is what it looks like when it's zoomed in. This is what it looks like when it's far away. Like it's much more scalable. I'd also say like, and this is kind of for people like more on the technical side, like learning Solidity and other object oriented programming languages for writing smart contracts. That is in massive demand right now. If you can learn Solidity or an object-oriented programming language and learn how to write smart contracts, you can make a lot of money because they're highly in demand. Good ones are, and there's just not enough good programmers out there for all the projects. They can do it to create their own projects, or they can work with other people. If they just want to be on the technical side, they can collaborate. It won't be hard for them to network around and connect with other people who can put all the pieces together, right?
Yeah, that's a great opportunity.
Yeah, it's just there's massive opportunity for Solidity developers right now.
You know, I'm thinking of, so I have this Pokemon YouTube channel. I don't know if you know, but it's grown quite big. And in the Pokemon space, there's a lot of collectors. And, you know, I have this like vision for maybe there's like this virtual world that we create for the channel that certain people can get access to. And it's, you know, in the meta and certain events happen there, certain drops of new things happen there. And it just becomes this like, you know, almost like Fortnite, how they run concerts inside of their platform every once in a while, and they do these cool collaborations. And you know, and even talking about Fortnite, right? They sell digital like skins or digital like backpacks, digital other things that you can put on your character, and there are only a certain number of them, or they're only available for like a certain day. And there's so much transaction. I mean, this is why Fortnite itself was like $1 billion company at one point, and it was only selling digital assets that literally didn't even change the games.
Right. You didn't even have to have it, right? You can still play the game without it.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So, man, there's so much to unpack here. I'm sure this won't be the last time we talk about NFTs in the future.
Yeah. VR chat too is a good place for people to look at. Like VR chat it's free. Like people can use it and you can look at it inside of VR. And they're just doing a lot of cool things because it's a lot of builders who are are passionate and they want to build cool stuff. I mean, I think that a lot of times like the coolest things come out of that initial just passion to make cool stuff. And it's not necessarily like the idea of monetizing it comes later, but like less technical, you don't even have to be super technical to check something like that out. Maybe see about like creating community within there, linking up with people who are builders inside there. And then try not to rush into, like if you're interested in like NFTs or like investing in NFTs and stuff, I would say like definitely like be patient, try to find the people that you can trust in the space and the people that are building the things that you would build yourself if you had the technical tools to do so, right? And then as time goes on, like the barrier to entry for creatives is becoming lower and lower as these tools become more and more intuitive. And I think that's something that, like, especially Gene and I being like in AI, it's like, it's super exciting for us to see people who are less technical, but have like just amazing ideas for creating stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think it's going to be super far off where you see, instead of like a Netflix curating and saying, hey, you liked that show, check out this show that we have in our catalog, but like literally like on the fly, creating something that's like custom and tailored specifically to you through AI, through the use of AI. Yeah. But you can kind of dive into, if even like non-technical people can look at tools like Art Breeder or Wombo or Wizard WZRD, which is one of the artists, Xander, who had a drop on our platform a couple weeks ago. There's tools out there that people can play around with who aren't super technically savvy too, but they want to get involved, right?
Yeah, this is really cool. I'm on braindrops.cloud right now. Gene, I'm seeing some of your loops. They look really amazing. And it's cool that those are all AI generated. That's awesome. That's really neat.
Yeah. And Gene, I'll just to toot Gene's horn a little bit before we go. I'll say like one of the cool things, and Gene is like there's three co-founders and Punk 2513. He does all of the, he's like our technical co-founder on the web development side and the Solidity side. And then there's like Gene that does all the AI stuff. So Gene is like super plugged into the AI world, was one of the first people to create GAN artwork. I think he and another academic in 2014, 2015, around that time, created some GAN stuff, and Gene kept with the art stuff. So he's an OG when it comes to AI artwork, you know? So it's really fortunate. We all the pieces kind of came together, and we all serve our different, I kind of come from like the collector perspective and the NFT side. And then Gene's the AI expert. And then we have 2513 that's doing all the back end stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of plans to the future. I know that we're cut short a little bit on time, but this hopefully wasn't too technical, you know, for your audience, but
that was great.
Yeah, I find it interesting. It'd be fun to come back maybe and talk another time.
That's great. Well, it's exciting what's happening, and it's cool that you guys are sort of on the forefront and being innovative, and thank you for a lot of the education and sort of just bringing it down to sort of normal terms for us. For others, it still might be a little over our heads, but I'm definitely interested, especially as a community owner and somebody who wants to build, you know, fans and create this idea that, you know, we all belong together kind of stuff. It's just really exciting. So thank you for helping out, both you, Gene and Justin. Thanks for your time, and we'll talk soon, I hope.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Pat.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Justin and Gene. Again, you can check out their website and their NFTs that they have available. And again, just start exploring that world. We have a lot of resources in the show notes as well. But if you want to check them out, braindrops.cloud. A lot of Gene's work is just very fascinating to look at. And again, the application of this in community and experiences similar to what Gary's doing is just really fascinating. I imagine that we're going to see a lot of that in the future. There is a podcast that I follow on YouTube called Colin and Samir, and they just came out with an episode that talked about how you could own part of Mr. Beast's channel. And whether that actually happens or not is not the thing. It's like, well, that is possible, and how you could actually sell your assets as a creator through the world of blockchain and NFT. And again, just starting those gears going on. And sometimes it just makes me more confused. Other times I get really jazzed about it. And again, this is just the start of a discussion, and I wanted to get the artist's perspective first. We might interview people like Gary V and others who are using this in business later. And would love to hear your thoughts. Let me know on Twitter at Pat Flynn and on Instagram at Pat Flynn as well. And again, thank you for listening in. And Justin, Gene, I appreciate your time today, and you're the best. So thank you so much. The show notes are available at smartpassiveincome.com/session555. And I look forward to serving you next week, where we're speaking with somebody who knows a lot about NFTs, but we're not going to dive into that mostly. It's mostly about how to grow and start a business from scratch and how to best validate your ideas, which is obviously very, very important. So make sure you subscribe, and we'll see you then. Cheers. Peace out. And as always, Team Flynn for the win.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Passive Income podcast at smartpassiveincome.com. I'm your host, Pat Flynn. Our senior producer is Sarah Jane Hess. Our series producer is David Grabowski. And our executive producer is Matt Gartland. Sound and video editing by Sean West Media. The Smart Passive Income podcast is a production of SPI Media. We'll catch you in the next session. Entrepreneurs, what is the smart way to save when your growing business takes you on the road? Whether you're going to events or conventions or you're speaking somewhere, no matter what it is, you need to sign up for a free membership with Hertz Business Rewards. Yep, Hertz Rental Car created a program to help small and mid-sized businesses save money. Work trips, client meetings, industry conferences. With Hertz Business Rewards, you save at least 20% every time you rent a car. And you'll save on more than just the daily rate. Members earn credits redeemable toward free rental days. And it's also free to add an additional driver if any additional coworkers come along. And for those Gen Z entrepreneurs out there, no young renter fees. Plus, sign up for Hertz Business Rewards today and earn 3x credit during your first 90 days. These benefits add up to big savings that stack more dollars in your wallet. Join for free at hertz.com/business rewards. Applies to base rate, taxes, fees, and options excluded. Additional terms and exclusions apply. Visit hertz.com/business rewards to learn more. Hey there, and thanks for sticking around to the end. If you're looking for more great shows like this one, definitely give How Success Happens a listen. Another great show from the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. On How Success Happens, Robert Tuchman features some of today's brightest entrepreneurial minds talking about overcoming challenges and viewing them as learning experiences to create success. The challenges that entrepreneurs face are ultimately what make many of us successful, however we define success, and that's what the show is all about. There's lots of names you'll surely recognize in the show every single week. Just recently, Robert had Nasty Gal CEO Sophia Amoruso on the show, and the former CEO of Snapple the week before that, which is really awesome. So listen to How Success Happens right now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher.